The Australian government has recently come out saying that all teachers should be trained in explicit instruction and that that's the way to go. So in today's episode, I'm going to explore this whole hoo-ha around explicit instruction and what I think we should be really focused on. Hello and welcome to Blooming Curious, a podcast that's all about nurturing that natural curiosity in our early years, kids and students. I'm Edwina, your host from the Ed's Lessons blog, a passionate advocate for play and inquiry, and on a mission to keep children curious and questioning. The days of talk and chalk are over. We're diving into the world of integrated, inquiry and nature-based learning, and exploring the strategies that create lifelong learners. So if you're a classroom or homeschool educator, or even a curious parent, then this is the place for you. Here in Australia, our government, and I suspect it's no different anywhere else, has once again come up with a strategy that they feel is much better for student outcomes. Since our student performance is going down the drain, and that is that all teachers need to be teaching using explicit instruction. Now, I don't know where these government officials have been, but explicit instruction has been around for quite some time now. And in the show notes, I'm going to put links up to two publications, one from the late 1980s and another from 2018, that clearly demonstrated the effectiveness of explicit instruction for literacy and numeracy. And I want to add here that there have been several studies done way before this in the US, for example, because I remember doing an assignment at uni on this, which is many moons ago now. And for the life of me, I can't find it, so I can't link it. But in the study, they demonstrated that explicit instruction was particularly brilliant at improving literacy, especially reading in low-performing schools. So we know it's an effective teaching strategy. Now, in 2018, there was a paper written by one of my very own university lecturers, Lorraine Hammond, and she joined together with Wendy Moore, and I quote, "In Australia, there is a growing interest in teacher-directed approaches that present new learning material to students in an explicit, direct, and highly scaffolded manner. Despite evidence of their efficacy," and then she goes on to cite a whole bunch of people, "these teacher-directed instructional approaches remain neither politically or romantically correct," another citing, "among some educators. In contrast, enthusiasm for teacher-directed approaches has come from Australian politicians, policymakers, and researchers, and has been widely reported in the media," and she quotes a whole bunch of people from 2014, "as a tool to address the declining performance of Australian students in international testing. Buckingham, 2016, attributed Australia's performance in PISA to the privileging of inquiry-based approaches and argued this needs to be revised in the light of evidence showing the greater effectiveness of teacher-directed explicit instruction." The authors go on to explain the difference between direct and explicit instruction, and I think this is really important. And I quote, "Unlike direct instruction, which consists of a suite of commercially available teaching resources and developed from the pioneering work of Siegfried Engelmann in the 1960s, explicit instruction is not scripted. Instead, teachers must determine what new knowledge, strategy, or rule they will teach and how this will be communicated to students in a fast-paced manner that provides guided practice and regular formative feedback. Although many of the instructional principles are similar to direct instruction, in explicit instruction, the emphasis is on teaching behaviors that maximize student achievement rather than curriculum design. Hatt draws the distinction. The teacher decides the learning intentions and success criteria, makes them transparent to the students, demonstrates them by modeling, evaluates if they understand what they have been told by checking for understanding and retelling them what they have been told by tying it together with closure." That was all a very big mouthful, I know, but where am I going with this? Well, firstly, I'm not going to argue the benefits or the pitfalls of explicit instruction. But the paper mentioned they looked at how coaching teachers in the strategy helped their practice and improved student outcomes. And I think many teachers believe that they are teaching explicitly, but actually the explicit model is very specific and requires a specific set of procedures which are fast-paced and check for understanding using an I do, we do, you do model. And it's like the gradual release of responsibility model. And in this paper, Hammond and Moore point out that in their one-year experiment, using their specific model brought about measurable and significant change. So if you indeed are a curious educator with a growth mindset, you will be checking and you'll be looking at your own practice to see where you can improve and whether or not your explicit teaching is in fact just that and not direct instruction. This is significant because one is just following a script and practicing, while the other includes modeling, evaluating for understanding, and independent practice. And so now that we've got explicit out of the way, I want to address part of the quote from earlier, where Buckingham in 2016 attributed Australia's performance in PISA, P-I-S-A, to the privileging of inquiry-based approaches and argued this needs to be revised in the light of evidence showing the greater effectiveness of teacher-directed explicit instruction. Now, firstly, can we just address the elephant in the room? We're talking here about results of students' performance. Okay, so that's obvious. If you want students to test well, you teach them explicitly in this model I've talked about so that they are 100% clear in what they have to do. So that's one part of the equation. By extrapolation, that would mean that despite everything we know about the efficacy of explicit instruction, obviously, either we're not teaching using the strategy or we're not applying the strategy correctly. Now, I don't know what we're doing, but I think that schools and individual teachers will have to reevaluate the effectiveness of their explicit practices for themselves. And secondly, in that piece cited by Buckingham, where he says the privileged of inquiry-based approaches are responsible for the lack of performance results in this PISA test, which is an international test. Really? Now, I don't know what this PISA international test actually tests, but inquiry-based teaching is much broader and deeper. It's not there to do well in a test. Inquiry is about getting kids to think, to wonder and explore, and eventually getting them to take responsibility for their own learning. It's how people cope and deal with real-life situations. Any great teacher knows that teaching is about having a suite of strategies, a tool belt, so to speak, with a bunch of different strategies or tools that each come out for a specific task. If you want to teach a kid to read and make sure they have well-established phonemic awareness, use explicit instruction. You want to teach a kid how to write a report following some basic steps? You do it through explicit instruction. But when you want a kid to analyze a sentence, to improve it, you don't just tell them the answer. You encourage them to use their God-given gray matter to think about how they can improve it. You scaffold, but you encourage them to look critically at their sentence or their writing and see it for themselves, how they can improve it. You're not going to be an enabler and encourage them to just sit there like a potato and be expected to be filled up with your words. You want them to come up with their own words. This is how inquiry works. It's a mindset, a stance, or as Kath Murdoch says, it's a lens through which you teach. Inquiry isn't a separate subject or something you teach on a Wednesday afternoon. It's embedded in a culture of learning. It dovetails with explicit instruction. It's not an and-or approach. It really makes me crazy when I see comments like that you don't get results with inquiry. Well, my question is, what do you want to achieve? If you want citizens or people who simply follow the rules, don't think for themselves, and wait for someone else, like possibly governments or teachers or whoever, to tell them what to do and open up their brains and then put the stuff inside, then go with direct explicit instruction and create an army of robots who are programmed to do and not think. On the other hand, if you want to create people and citizens of the future who question, think for themselves, are creative problem solvers, critical thinkers, then it's a no-brainer. We've got to integrate inquiry-based learning into our toolkit so that we can create a future where there's innovation, where there's accountability, where one person's word isn't just accepted, but scrutinized and tested and verified, just like scientists do. And surely, if we say that we educate the whole child, then inquiry-based strategies must be included in our culture of learning. We cannot claim to be child-centered or that educating the whole child is important to us if we're not including inquiry and play into a repertoire that, of course, also includes explicit instruction when we're teaching new content or skills, which, incidentally, also includes the teaching of the inquiry process. You're going to do that explicitly too. And to show you just how easy it is to take on inquiry mindset, I have a free resource just for you. You go to resources.edslessons.com/ how to encourage natural curiosity. I know that's a mouthful, but I'll put the link in the show notes for you. Download it and see how you can get tuned in to simple everyday activities of children, like going for a walk or playing in the yard, and get them wondering and thinking. And if you're curious and you want to find the strategies that will help your learners become more curious and become independent thinkers, then get Blooming Curious, my weekly newsletter where I share strategies, tips, and interesting finds with you. And to sign up, just go to www.edslessons.com and sign up with a form there. The link will be in the show notes too. And listen, I just want to thank you for listening to this podcast and me on my soapbox. I know that you could have chosen any one of a gazillion out there, but you chose this one, and for that I am really grateful. And if you liked today's episode, please share it with your friends and subscribe or follow so you'll be notified each time I publish a new episode, and that way you won't have FOMO. And if you really like this podcast, please leave a review, because that will be super wonderful. So until next week, stay blooming curious. And I'd love to know on social media, you can send me a DM on Instagram, what you think of today's episode. I hope it got you thinking. See you around. Cheers.